Welcome to this new nutrition business podcast. My name is Julian Mellantin, and today I'm going to be talking to you about the wonderful world of lab-based meat and how it's ever going to be acceptable to consumers. Now, since about 2016, we have been bombarded with forecasts, which I'm sure you've all seen in the media, that plant-based meat substitutes were going to completely change the way that we all eat. As you know, that has not worked out the way that the promoters of meat substitute companies said it would. And in fact, as I've discussed in previous podcasts, plant-based meat substitutes are on track to be one of the biggest failures in food industry history. Well, we now need to brace ourselves again, because even as plant-based meat sales stall and actually sales fall in countries like the UK, the US, and elsewhere, we're now going to be subjected for the next few years to another avalanche of hype. This time, the hype is going to be about the potential of lab-based meat and how much it's going to transform the way that we all eat. Now, the prompt for this avalanche of hype is that lab-based meats have been approved to go on sale in the US for the first time just in the past few weeks. So let's just start by clarifying what we mean by lab-based meats. I'm going to give a short definition here, which will make scientists cringe. I apologize. I'm just trying to keep it simple. So lab-based meat, sometimes referred to as cell-cultivated meat, is a meat-like substance which is produced by fermenting animal cells in tanks, big stainless steel fermentation tanks. And the cells are fermented in a kind of nutrient medium that includes glucose and various other things. The idea is you start with a small number of animal cells, they reproduce and they grow into a mass of this meat-like substance, which can then be taken out of the fermentation tanks and further processed and transformed into a product similar to, say, ground beef or put into a burger or a sausage. The technology, despite many of the claims that we're all going to see in the media over the next few years, is still a long way off making anything resembling a sirloin steak. And just to reiterate, it is actually made with real animal cells. So that's perhaps not going to fly so well with vegans and vegetarians. Now, what we're talking about here is a biochemical process. And I'm not going to dwell upon the enormous number of technical challenges that still surround making lab-based meats commercially. I'm not going to dwell on the immense cost and challenges in scaling up, because fermenters are normally very small and simply can't produce the quantities of meat-like substance that would be needed to end up with a commercially viable meat. Nor am I going to discuss the high cost of the finished products made with complex processing using lots of energy in pharmaceutical standard clean rooms. No, I'm not going to talk about any of these things. Instead, we're going to talk about the single most important driver of all, the real decider of whether lab-based meats are going to work, and that's the consumer. So before we do that, let's just return to what's kicked off this tidal wave of hype. Well, the big spur was the announcement in June 2023 that lab meat is to officially go on sale in the United States for the first time. The US Food and Drug Administration and the US Department of Agriculture approved products from two companies, one called Upside Foods and the other called Eat Just. Both companies are based in California. Where else? And what these two companies are doing is they're debuting a chicken-like product. And cleverly, they're starting out with selling it just at restaurants run by well-known chefs. Upside Foods is selling at a restaurant in San Francisco. Eat Just at a restaurant in Washington, D.C. Here's a flavor of the hype. Quote, everything has changed. Everything about the way food makes it to the table and how meat makes it to the table is about to be different, said the chief operating officer of Upside Foods in an interview. And here's another quote from one of these companies. This is a watershed moment in the history of food. Well, there is a huge amount of money at stake. Upside Foods has had an investment totaling $600 million. Eat Just has had, we think, around $1 billion. In fact, it looks like more than $20 billion has been invested in the 156 companies that are all trying to bring lab meats to the market. Upside Foods and Eat Just Foods products will have to be labeled cell cultivated chicken. So in rolling out their cell cultivated chicken, both companies, they're actually being quite sensible, starting on a small scale. Starting in upscale restaurants, they'll get feedback from the consumer and hopefully it will produce lots of positive PR. But there is no question that they'll be looking to roll out their products into retail and broader food service much more widely and much more quickly. They will, of course, want to get ahead of their 154 competitors. And even more pressing than that, the investors who've put up the billions will be super eager for them to move ahead, get a good market position, and start to produce a return on their investment. And let's not be under any illusions here. This is not the food industry doing this. To the best of my knowledge, there are almost no food companies involved in this field. It's basically a whole bunch of finance bros and tech bros who think that they've got a solution to the world's problems. Now, the big question is, and I said, let's put aside all the technical problems, what is the consumer problem that these products are going to solve? What is it they're going to do that's going to be competitive? Because if you're offering something which is a substitute, so they're effectively saying to consumers, here's our lab meat, eat this instead of animal meat, in what way is lab meat going to bring something to the party to prompt people to make the shift? Well, the number one reason that any food product succeeds or fails is how it delivers on taste and texture. And this is a lesson that the plant-based meat people have already learnt the hard way. They have failed to meet consumer expectations. As I just said, this is particularly important when you're offering a substitute for an existing product. The lab meat people are essentially counting on the fact they're going to produce this meat-like substance, which gives an eating experience that's so good that meat eaters are willing to switch to eat it. Well, at the moment, we just don't know whether it's good enough. So let's be generous. Let's suppose the lab meat people have got it right, and they have produced something that tastes quite good. So let's move on to what's the consumer problem that it solves. So number one, is it giving good nutrition? Well, the lab meat companies state that their products will be nutritionally equivalent to actual meat. Unfortunately, based on looking at the published research and what we can make out from talking to people who understand the process and looking at what's in the public domain, it is clear there is currently zero evidence to back up the claim that lab meat will be nutritionally equivalent. We have not seen anyone produce an analysis of a lab-based meat and compare it to an animal meat on its macronutrients and its micronutrients. The focus of the lab meat makers is protein. That's what they talk about. They say this is an alternative protein. It's a more sustainable protein. However, not all proteins are the same. Some are more easily absorbed by the human body than others. Dairy, for example, is a very complete and high quality protein, and your body absorbs dairy protein way, way more than any plant protein. At the moment, there's again no evidence in the public domain that lab meat will perform in the human body, will be absorbed in the same way as protein from dairy or animal meat. And meat is much more than protein. It is also, for example, an excellent source of B vitamins, iron, and zinc. As I'm sure you know, those are nutrients in which vegans are notoriously deficient. Now, one thing which is a kind of hint that they're not going to be nutritionally equivalent is that in order to deliver on these extra things like B vitamins and iron and zinc, the manufacturers are going to have to do something when they feed the little animal cells. They're going to have to put a lot more ingredients to the fermentation process. That in turn is going to push up cost. And at the moment, the products are expensive and they're looking to drive the cost down. So it's going to be tempting for them to rein back on any extra things in the process to improve the nutritional profile. But as I said, at the moment, there's just no evidence of nutritional equivalence. Number two, offering the promise of a food that's animal-free. Well, unfortunately, this isn't animal-free. Unlike plant-based, it's actually based on cells from an animal that have been fermented. So this is going to be a little bit of a problem for the vegans and vegetarians. So what the lab meat makers are doing is they're talking about it being things like slaughter-free. Now, it's a fairly evocative term that will engage some people, but it's most consumers are aware that meat is from animals that are killed, and nonetheless, they happily eat it. In fact, in most cultures, that is absolutely not a barrier at all. So the slaughter-free selling point, which is kind of negative marketing rather than positive marketing, you can see that will probably fly well with a few people on the east and west coasts of the US, but it's very unlikely to engage consumers in most countries. Point number three, lab meat is more sustainable. Well, again, this is not something where that's by any means clear that it's more sustainable. How do we know that? It's because the lab meat makers have not managed to scale up their production to a big commercial level. And it's only when it's there that you can actually make a direct comparison. In fact, the claims that are made of lab meat being more sustainable are just ones the companies have said so far based on their early stage science. And looking at those claims, UC Davis, which is a university in California with a long history of working in food and agriculture, recently published an analysis that showed that, in fact, because of the amounts of energy that's involved in the fermentation process and the setting up of complex factories, the source of ingredients, the manufacturing to pharmaceutical standards, it is more than likely that lab meat will be using even more resources than producing animal meat. Again, nobody knows which way. Now, you might think that making a product more sustainable will motivate a lot of consumers. But at the moment, that greater sustainability is pretty much the sole selling point. And while it's true that consumers do want products to be more sustainable, they also want products to meet lots of other criteria in their lives. As we said at the beginning, they want good taste and texture. They want tremendous convenience. Sustainability, in fact, means many different things to different groups of people. Contrary to what you read in the media, sustainability is not motivating to everyone, nor is there much evidence that it is driving additional purchases. As you've probably heard me say before in podcasts, what the media says and what the reality is are often far apart. So let's give a little bit of a real-world example. The International Food Information Council in Washington, D.C., every year looks into the beliefs of American consumers, and sustainability always comes way down the list of what consumers want. I think it ranks like number five, below taste, convenience, price, and so on and so forth. And at most, 30% of people say that it figures in their decision-making. The other 70%, not. And in some countries, you know, that 30% would be quite generous because, of course, people have got budgets to manage. People's budgets are tighter than ever. So if anything, we'll see food sustainability being pushed down people's lists, and it'll be very hard to justify a premium price. Consumers do want sustainability, but they think it's food producers' responsibility, not theirs. They expect food producers to produce things that are more sustainable for the same price as regular foods. And that makes perfect sense. People are already busy going to work, paying the bills, raising the kids, recycling their packaging at home, coping with limited budgets. As far as they're concerned, it's up to the corporations, it's up to us, the food producers, to do the right thing for the planet and not charge them any more money for it. Interestingly, meat producers are already working towards meeting people's expectations around sustainability. You may have heard terms like regenerative agriculture, which is a different way of approaching agriculture, which is better for biodiversity and soil health and so on. And that's not just in relation to meat production, that's in relation to lots of aspects of agriculture. There are lots of meat producers working towards being carbon neutral. In Australia, some meat producers are already there. There are meat producers who are really raising the bar in terms when it comes to animal welfare. And you may have read that, you know, meat uses up huge quantities of water. Those statements don't distinguish between water that falls out of the sky or water that has to be pumped somewhere. So if you're consuming beef or lamb from Ireland or the UK, you are not causing a problem in terms of water consumption, because as you may have noticed, if you've ever visited either of those countries, the water quite commonly falls out of the sky. And farmers don't have to build reservoirs or take the water away from anywhere else. And that's actually true of lots of other places. what's also becoming very clear is that consumers want companies to offer more sustainable animal meat, because once they've got that message, it gives them permission to go on enjoying favorite foods, meat and dairy and so on. And a good example of this is the surge in demand for products labeled grass-fed. It's a message that's interpreted by consumers as meaning three things: better for animal welfare, better for the planet, and better for my health. It's already heading towards maybe 6 or 7% of the US meat market, growing strongly elsewhere. In Europe, Lidl, one of the discount retailers, even Lidl sells grass-fed meat with all the sustainable meanings that has in the mind of the consumer, and it does so at a very affordable price, not a super premium price. You know, your Lidl is for people who are watching their budgets. So for someone coming along with lab meat, talking about being more sustainable, well, that might have been a point of difference 5 years ago, but the market they're going into, the product they're competing with, animal meat, has woken up to the need to be more sustainable. So the sustainability has ceased to be a competitive advantage. Number four, convenience. Lab-based meat is not going to be more convenient. Classically, you know, if you want to get consumers' attention, you offer them something that tastes better and makes their life easier. But lab meat is going to be basically copying what meat already offers, sausages and burgers as the convenience products. So they're not achieving any competitive advantage, no extra benefit to the consumer. Five, health benefits. Again, there's no specific identifiable health benefit for lab meat. It's protein, okay, supposedly the same, but there's no above and beyond. One of the most interesting proteins that comes from animal sources, of course, is collagen. Collagen makes your skin, hair, and nails look better. There's no sense in which lab meat is going to be able to talk about making you look better, or your skin, or your hair, or your nails. It's not going to improve your digestive wellness. It's not going to boost your immunity. So again, no source of competitive advantage, no extra benefit to the consumer to cause them to buy it. And as we said before, yes, it's a type of protein, but we just don't know whether this protein is remotely equivalent in the way it works in the human body to protein that actually comes from animal sources. Number seven, people don't eat technology. Now, technology is vital. It is absolutely crucial to the food industry. Everything that we have in the modern supermarket in terms of being safe and having a good shelf life and tasting good, all the interesting ingredients that have been brought from around the world, they're a consequence of using food science and food technology to deliver those safe and healthy products. But food technology largely does this by being invisible to the consumer. Let's take the example of oat milk. So as I'm sure you all know, sales of oat milk have been growing strongly in most countries for the past 4 or 5 years. And oat milk is made possible by enzyme technology. About 30 years ago, a Swedish scientist, who I had the pleasure of meeting at the time, secured a patent to take enzymes and apply them to oats so that you end up with a smooth, easy-to-drink beverage. Without the enzyme, you basically have lumpy porridge. So Oatly and all the other brands, the whole growing oat milk market is only possible because of technology. But the consumer doesn't know this. We're not forcing them to eat enzymes. We're not ramming the technology in their face. They see oats, they see simpleness, they enjoy the taste and texture, and they're just not aware that that's a consequence of food technology. Lab meat, however, is literally the opposite. The products that have just been approved in the US will have to be labeled cell cultivated chicken. And that's going to require a bit of explanation. And the companies launching these products, of course, are communicating that they've produced them in fermentation tanks. They're trying to make them sound natural. But, you know, the moment you start talking overtly about technology, that for a lot of consumers is a big red flag. If there's anything that's been made crystal clear over the past 20 years, that if you give consumers obvious technology and there's no obvious benefit to them, they do not accept it. Since the late 1990s, food manufacturers have tried again and again to give people things that are overtly technological. So one of the best examples is GMOs. Consumers, however, rejected GMOs, and the message GMO-free is one that you commonly find on products. About a quarter of all new products launched in the United States are labeled GMO-free. It's a reassurance to the consumer that it doesn't contain this technology. And where did the technology go wrong? Well, it was for better yield, better productivity, but the consumer benefit was nil. So for most people, unless a product is giving them something tangible, better taste, more convenience, better health benefits, the risk of this strange sounding thing just doesn't seem worth it. In fact, in our industry, the biggest successes are not based on overt technology, but on traditional foods reinvented by taking something and just making it more convenient, adapting it to different tastes. So a way of doing this is to take food from one country where it's an everyday food and not very exciting and moving it to somewhere else where it's new and different. That's what happened with Greek yogurt. It's an everyday product in Greece, but back in 2007, it was basically unknown in the United States. So a company called Chobani introduced Americans to Greek yogurt. And compared to what they were consuming, which was thin and sweet and low fat and disappointing, this thick, delicious, high protein product was a huge step up in the taste and texture experience. And then a huge market was built on the back of that. It was the same story in China, where Yili Dairy introduced Chinese consumers to Greek yogurt. As an executive of the company said, an awful lot of the customers had heard of Greece but didn't quite know where it was. But the taste experience meant that Chinese people were very happy to consume more of it. And again, it became a $2.5 billion business in a very short space of time. If you look at consumer research, in fact, generally, it doesn't contain anything very encouraging for the lab meat makers. A study published earlier in 2023 in the Journal of Food Science investigated Dutch consumers' attitudes towards lab meat. What they found was that the perception of naturalness, or rather lab meat's complete lack of naturalness, will be a significant challenge. The author said, quote, "Its image of naturalness seems to be the main challenge they would have to overcome for general acceptance." Lab meat also scored low on people's perceptions of its healthiness and its safety. And this research aligns with research done by the International Food Information Council, who asked 1,000 Americans about their opinions on different protein sources. Cultured meat was given a resounding no. Nearly three quarters of people in the study would choose an original animal protein over lab meat. They were deterred by the unnaturalness. At New Nutrition Business, all year long, we spend our time trying to understand what motivates consumers, what they're embracing. We interview individuals, we do quantitative surveys, we look at company strategies, and we've been doing this for 27 years. It's clear to us that when you look at the body of evidence, while no one can say that lab meat is going to fail, the evidence leans towards it not being anything like as big as the finance bros and the tech bros who are backing it think it's going to be. It's not going to fail, but it is going to be disappointing when they compare it to the projections in their business plans. It very much looks as if billions of dollars has been raised to invest in technology, but nobody involved spent their time first thinking about the consumer, what they believe, food culture, and how a highly technological product would fit within it. It's as if they were determined not to pay any attention to any of the lessons that our industry has learned over the past 20 years. Thank you all for listening to this podcast. I hope you found it very enjoyable. Please go to our website, www.new-nutrition.com, and subscribe to our fantastic service. You'll be joining an elite group of people around the world who are the ones who actually think about what makes foods and beverages succeed, how the world of health and nutrition actually works. And we look forward to talking to you again sometime soon. Thanks and goodbye.